580 is made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, offering licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Bodywork Associates has opened a new office inside the Oasis Center in the Illini Union.
This is Focus 580, our morning talk program, hour number two of the show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls. In this hour of the show, we'll be talking about some of the challenges involved in caring for aging parents. As parents and their children age, both as they both age, their roles change and evolve. Children find that often that they have to take a more active role in their parents' lives. And although many times parents do appreciate their kids' desire to help, they also want to maintain as much of their independence as possible. And balancing all of this can be very, very difficult. We'll talk about some of the issues this morning in this part of Focus 580 with Dr. Linda Rhodes. She is a former Secretary of Aging for the state of Pennsylvania and continues to write and talk about these issues. During the time that she was there in Pennsylvania, she oversaw $1 billion worth of long-term care services and also created an award-winning family caregiving program there that helped a lot of people care for their loved ones at home. She has a doctorate in this field from Teachers College, Columbia University. She's also been a caregiver herself, taking care of her children's great grandmother who came to live with them following a stroke. She often testifies before legislative committees and is a popular speaker at conferences on aging and healthcare throughout the country. She's the author of a book that offers a lot of good basic advice, which is titled Caregiving as Your Parents Age, the complete guide to helping your parents age gracefully, happily, and healthfully. It is available in the paperback, so it's not terribly expensive. It's published by the New American Library, and you might find it helpful, so you can go out and take a look at it. She also has a website, Linda Rhodes Caregiving, which has a lot of basic information on there as well, so that if you have access to the internet, you can take a look at that. And here on the program, questions are welcome, comments. Perhaps people might want to offer a story about their own experience in this regard. Any and all of that is welcome. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Dr. Rhodes, hello.
Hello, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Very good.
We appreciate you giving us some of your time today.
Oh, thank you.
There's so much in here. And, you know, one of the things that really strikes me right off the bat, is something that you make note of here, has to do with this business of the roles and how the roles change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about the fact that now, you know, I'm of an age, so at least my peers are dealing with these kinds of issues. And one of the common places that you hear people say, well, you know, now that my parents are getting older, the roles do change, and it's almost like I'm the parent now and they're the children. And people say that, and yet that's not right at all. And I think it's probably even a mistake to think in those sorts of terms. And it's something maybe you can talk about, how it is that, in fact, no, that's you're always the child. It doesn't matter what happens. You're always the child. They're always the parent. But the nature of the relationship does change.
No, it does. And yet, I think you're very insightful, David, to say that it's probably not a good idea to view it as I'm all of a sudden now parenting my parent.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you take that role, you're really going down a road where you're going to end up with quite a bit of conflict and ill feelings. And because we really aren't assuming that role, even if someone has pretty advanced Alzheimer's disease, and it certainly appears, you know, because all of a sudden they need all of this physical care, you know, you still might think that. But I rather view it as your parents help guide you, probably especially during those teenage years and young adult years. And it's the same kind of thing where you can assist them and be more of a guide to them navigating the whole healthcare system. You'll have to, you know, do this kind of navigation, help them with paperwork, dealing with, you know, things like Medicare Part D. So there's a lot of ways that you can help you know, really learn how to learn the system and know about different chronic conditions and help them be more organized so that you're more of a, I would say, of a guide helping your parent through the transition of aging.
Hmm. Well, what happens if you have, I realize this question is a bit abstract, but what happens if you there's a particular situation or something needs to happen, some decision needs to be made, and you think it would be the best to do one thing, and your parent thinks it would be the best to do something else, or maybe they don't know what to do, and so you don't want to get right in there and say, look, this is what's going to happen. On
right.
the other hand, you know, it seems that sometimes you feel like maybe that's what you should do is get in there and say, you know, look, this is what's got to happen, and maybe it's not what we'd like, but this is what we're going to have to do.
Well, I think part of it, you can circumvent some of that if you do a little bit more of advanced planning. And one thing that I recommend is that you can approach your parent to say something like, look, it's so important that you're in control and that you're making these decisions, but the only way I'm going to know what you want so that I can help carry out those wishes is that if we kind of play out a few what-if scenarios so that, you know, Dad, God forbid you have a stroke, but should you have a stroke and there might be a short period of time there where you're not speaking or you're extremely confused, and they're going to be asking us different things in terms of where you should go for rehab. Let's talk about that now. Would that make more sense? Are there any particular skilled nursing facilities or nursing homes that we ought to be looking at now just in case you would need that in the short run? Or would that mean that you would come and be with us if you happen to have the resources, and then we would bring in some home health people? And a different kind of, you would need to have durable health care power of attorney and also to be able to write the checks and do different bills. But what you're doing is you're still placing, they're the ones that are in control, and you're trying to position yourself to understand what it is they want so that in case that time comes, you're able to carry out those wishes. There will, of course, be times where there's conflict, but I think one of the things I always recommend is that, and I'm, you know, telling people in their 70s all the time to do this on their own, but is to get a geriatric assessment, I would say like every 2 years, where you're working with a whole group of people, like social workers, occupational therapists, and then geriatricians who are really trained in the physiology of an aging body, and they'll be very much up on how medications are processed through your body a bit differently when you're older than if you're younger. They'll have a good handle on all the multiple conditions and chronic conditions an older person might have, or they certainly should have a good understanding of you know, how different medications will interplay with each other, interact, so that you're getting a really good holistic assessment. And then that way, especially if it's a situation, maybe you went home and you see your mom and seems to be pretty confused and you're not quite sure why. I mean, I'll see some families just jump to conclusions right away and they'll go, oh my gosh, I visited my mom, she's all confused and she must have Alzheimer's, so now we got to start looking for a nursing home. It's better to step back and really find out what you truly are dealing with, and so get that person assessment and then find out from there. Because sometimes it just might be she's missing medications, or she's taking a new one, and that's causing the confusion. So you don't want to always jump to conclusions either.
Mm-hmm. I think you touched on a number of things. But one of the things that strikes me that it's maybe important is that I expect that probably there are a lot of children who have no idea of the details of their parents' financial situation. You know, mm-hmm. they don't know how much money their parents have. They don't know where the money is, in what banks. Mm-hmm. They don't know where the records are. They don't know what kind of insurance they have. They don't know who their doctors are. They may not know until they really get into it. They may not mm-hmm. know things like how much medication, you know, what medication they're taking. It seems that there are a whole lot of really basic things that at some point you're going to have to know, that maybe going into that situation earlier on in this process as things go along, that you don't know, that says, well, you know, that's mom and dad's business, that's their thing, and they've always taken care of it, and I don't really need to know that stuff. And
right.
In fact, when the point comes, you actually do need to know that.
Yeah, you do, and you don't want to be in a position where, and that's where a lot of us, I think, find ourselves. It'll be some medical crisis, or you'll get a call like I did. It was a year ago, and my mother fell, and she broke her hip. And, I mean, I was fortunate enough that I could take off for 5 weeks and care for my mom while she was in rehab, and help make the transition to going home and organizing all of the care. But what made that much easier is that I knew all of the information ahead of time. I have a contact sheet. I know all of her neighbors. I have those phone numbers. I've met with her different physicians, and I've got to know the nurse managers. I know she has a long-term care insurance policy, so I have those numbers. So even, and I'm here in Philadelphia, so even if something happens to my mom and I get a call out in Phoenix, I can immediately call the home health agency that already accepts her long-term care insurance and have somebody out there right away, and they could do an assessment for me, get on the phone and tell me what's going on, and, you know, and in the meantime, I can fly out there. But it's important if you have all of this information ahead of time. And again, I think if you approach your parent, that it's just wanting to be in a position to move quickly and make decisions that they would want to have made. It's going to mean you need to know about the insurance and make sure you've got the durable health care power of attorney and where the will is, you know, and that kind of thing, so that you're able to make decisions in a crisis that are a little bit more, you know, well thought out. And, mm-hmm. and again, that's why I always think it is kind of helpful. I know I've done that with both of my mom and dad, and they're, I mean, very private people, and it's a generation that, I mean, I remember my grandmother always, you know, telling me, you never, ever talk about money. Or personal finances, and you never ask those kinds of questions. And so, I mean, it's a generation that that's just kind of one of those things that's off topic. So approaching it, I think, is if you do it in a way where, again, it's about them keeping and maintaining control, and you're just, you know, kind of the guide to make sure these different things happen. You know, or if, and sometimes too, they'll have a friend and they'll learn, you know, where they had a stroke and they couldn't make decisions for a few weeks, where, you know, it can be kind of a disaster, especially with the new HIPAA laws. You know, it's guaranteeing privacy of an individual, which can be a good thing. But I know we've had to sign special forms at any of the hospitals that my mom would go to, so that if something does happen, I'm actually able to speak to someone at the hospital and they can release information. Without that, they can't. Doesn't matter if you're a daughter or a son. They can't go off and release it. So I think if, you know, sometimes you might hear of an example, or, you know, where someone didn't have these forms signed and they never had this discussion, and it might have meant, you know, a delay in care, or they ended up choosing, you know, a facility that didn't turn out to be very good or for their benefit. So, the advanced planning and doing it while you're not in a crisis, emotions aren't running high. Because when you said earlier, you know, your parents could disagree, but you could be having the same thing going on with your siblings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, where one sibling feels, yeah, I really think, you know, mom does need to go into maybe assisted living, that she really shouldn't be living alone any longer. And then there might be another sibling that says, well, no, I really think she can pull this off if we bring in some non-medical senior care, and maybe if we have a personal alert, and I think it's important for mom to remain independent. But it's important, you know, that mom's involved in that decision too. But, you know, sometimes you're going to find real disagreements also going on among siblings, so that if parents are making these choices and thinking this through ahead of time, it can save, I think, a lot of potential conflict, you know, throughout the entire family.
Mm-hmm. Just to go back to underline something that you mentioned that I think, again, is important for people to keep in mind, and that is making sure that you get the kind of clearances that you need so that you can talk with mm-hmm. your parents' doctors. And,
right.
and it is the case that if your mom, your dad goes to the doctor, they're having some kind of medical problem, and you would like to have a conversation with the doctor to try to get a better understanding of what's going on and perhaps what you might be doing, unless your parent has specifically signed off on that and said, mm-hmm. yes, it's okay for you to talk with my children. You cannot call your parents' doctor and say, hey, look, what's going on here? Can you tell
exactly.
me what's going on? They can't,
right.
by law, they cannot, even though it's your mom
you
and dad.
You can even know the doctor.
They can't, by law, they cannot discuss the case with you.
Right, Right, and that's why it's really important that you have those papers signed with the with the doctor's offices that you're going to. I mean, to make sure that your parents have that and that you all have copies. And I know I made like 10 copies of that of a letter that my mom drafted, saying that both my sister and also me that could get this information, and they gave all the contact information. And we made copies, and then I took it. There's only two hospitals that she would ever go to where she's at in Sun City West and Phoenix, and so they also have that all on file so that we are allowed to be able to speak to them, very quickly.
Real quick here, let me introduce again our guest, Dr. Linda Rhodes. She's the author of the book, Caregiving as Your Parents Age, the complete guide to helping your parents age gracefully, happily, and healthfully. It's published by New American Library. Actually, there's another book that's kind of a companion that offers also a lot of information. And this book is titled, Should Mom Be Left Alone? Should Dad Be Driving? Your Q&A Companion for Caregiving. Same publisher. Our guest, Dr. Linda Rhodes, is former Secretary of Aging for the state of Pennsylvania and continues to do a lot of writing and speaking on these same kinds of issues. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Just again, to go back to something that you touched on, it may well be that children will find themselves in a situation where, for some reason, their parent cannot act on their own behalf. And so the children may be having to make medical decisions, may be having to see that bills are paid, all that sort of stuff. At what point do you think that children should start thinking about having these powers of attorneys drawn up so that when they're in that kind of situation, then legally they can, in fact, do these things?
Well, I think most experts will tell you that, having a power of attorney so they can go ahead and take care of bills and that, and also the durable health care power of attorney to make decisions for someone during the duration where they can't. Those are things that actually any age we should have. Mm-hmm. That to me is something that just isn't related to aging. But and of course, the whole movement now, especially I think after the whole Terry Schiavo case, is really reinforcing how important it is for everyone to have some advance directive, or also known as a living will. Again, that's any age, because none of us know. Some sort of accident will happen in a car. For I think an older individual, there's always the fear of, a potential heart attack or a stroke, where all of a sudden you're not able to make those decisions, that it's just so important to have all of that done now. To me, that's something that you don't wait till, and there's not like a magic age saying, at 62, this is when you have that conversation. To me, it's something that you have right away, or at least say, do you have that? And then the next thing is to make sure that, do people know where it is? Because it'd be great. You have all of these signed and ready to go. But if they're like locked up somewhere and no one knows where they are, and they might even have, an older spouse who might not be aware, or they might forget. They might be in a car accident together, or the whole trauma of all of this going on and getting to the emergency room, they might forget to even have brought the forms, or somebody can go back and get them. It's just so important that A, it's done, and then B, is that people know where it is, and more than just one other person.
Yeah, and as you say, really, we all ought to have these things. Well, couples certainly should have them drawn up for each other. So it's very clear that if one of the couple cannot speak for himself or herself, that it's clear that the other person has then the legal authority to represent that person.
Sure, because there might be a need for emergency surgery or some special procedure for that individual to have, and so you need to be able to act quickly, especially in incidents of both a heart attack and a stroke.
Yeah, you talked about the fact that I believe you live on the East Coast. You live somewhere in Pennsylvania.
Pardon?
You live somewhere in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, near Philadelphia.
Okay. And your mom is in Phoenix?
She's in Sun City West. My parents are divorced. They divorced about 25 years ago. And so my father, is where I grew up, is up in Erie, Pennsylvania. So, it makes it kind of difficult. So far, you know, I tease them that they've been good about not scheduling a medical crisis at the same time. Because it's like, oh, yeah. You know, it'd be one of these terrible Sophie choices kind of thing where do I go? But I'm very fortunate my sister is a nurse, and so we've kind of split up the caretaking whenever, you know, certain things arise. So, but it does make it tough. And, I mean, what I have done is, I have all the forms and I know everything about each parent and, you know, so that we have access to that very quickly. And we've had these discussions. Well, you know, my mom has macular degeneration and she's still able to function and live at home. But, you know, there might be a point where she can't and she's looked at an assisted living. She still would like to live in that area. She's been there 25 years and still has a lot of friends and she loves the social network there. But then there can also be a point where if she needs more than that and it becomes, say, for instance, skilled care, then we've been talking, well, then at that point, Mom, it would really be more helpful for me if I was able to bring you back either to live with us or at a skilled facility that's right near me versus us now all of a sudden traveling, you know, close to 3,000 miles to, you know, try to tend to her needs if she were ever to reach a point where the reason that she's staying with the social infrastructure and everything, she wasn't able to utilize. So, it's just kind of playing out, well, what if any of those things happen? Mm-hmm.
Well, there, and again, you're touching on what is today, I think, one of the big challenges of caring for parents or trying to help parents, and that is the reality of American life, that you could be on one end of the country and your parents could be on the other. And then just to make it that much more complicated, if your parents are divorced, then you could have parents in two different places.
Right.
So you
right.
could have, you could, your mother could be in one place, your father could be in another place, and you could still be separated by a significant distance, and
that
makes it that much more difficult.
Yeah, and I mean, long-distance caregiving is something that's just becoming, those numbers are increasing all of the time, and it's one of the things that I think creates some of the stress of caregiving and wanting to help your parents and do so much for them, but the distances, and then you add, too, with the divorce rate among baby boomers. One of the other things that happens is that, I mean, you inherit in-laws who are also older. And I know for me, I'm still very close to my former in-laws. And so I've been helping them, too. You know, so it starts to add up where you find that in any family, there'll be like one or two who seem to be more of the ones that are dealing with caregiving. And those numbers are just like constantly increasing. And then you just have these different layers of, and I think also with baby boomers, you still might be raising your kids or they're in college. And so you have all of those expenses and the whole juggling act gets pretty tough. Hmm.
Well, suppose you have this situation where you have a parent and you have children, say that there is more than one child. So it's you and some siblings and it's clear that the parent cannot live completely independently anymore. And mm-hmm. so you make the decision, as you said, you were thinking, well, you know, maybe someday your mother might have to move and to live, if not with you, then closer to where you are. Well, so supposing you're in a situation here where you have several kids, and there might be an option that the parent could go some different places. And how do you decide which of the children's going to take on this responsibility and is going to be the one where the parent is going to go?
Mm-hmm. Well, oftentimes you see the statistics bear it out. It's usually the oldest daughter. It's usually a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes they'll probably be the eldest. Or it will be someone, whoever is the closest in proximity. You'll find that the caregiving more of that caregiving shifts on the person whoever lives the closest. So that's been the person who's probably been traveling there and taking care of Mom. And if certainly that sibling is in the same town as the parent, then that will be the individual. And so, you might have a brother and sister who live in different states, so it's going to be more on you. So you'll find usually, birth order seems to be one of the things, a daughter, and then the other would be proximity. And one of the things that I've told folks is that when you look at caregiving and you're going to care for a parent, that one of the things to do is kind of create your own inventory within your family of the different skills that you all have, and to kind of get away from birth order, but look at skills. Like my younger sister is a nurse, and so Jody's the one that she'll make the calls to the doctors because she'll be able to relate to them more, to the nurses, especially to the nurses, and so Jody will be able to interpret more of the information, and she'll get them to fax blood work, and so she can really stay up on interpreting that. I'm the one that negotiates the system more, deals with the insurance and that kind of thing. And so maybe you have a sibling also who's very good, might be an accountant type individual, and maybe they're good at figuring out some of the insurance needs of your parents and some of the financial needs, and so they're doing that. You know, somebody else could be at least managing and making all of the phone calls for different doctor's offices, in terms of their visits, because, I mean, you'll find someone in their, like, late 70s, early 80s, they'll probably have about three different chronic conditions, and the way our healthcare system is set up, you've got to see, a different kind of doctor for every different body part. I had a friend who was during his last year of life, and he was seeing a cardiologist for his heart. He was seeing a rheumatologist, an ophthalmologist, because he had glaucoma, an internist he was seeing for his gout, and he was also seeing a nephrologist and a urologist. And I know he, at some point just felt like that's just all I am, or I'm just these body parts, and none of this is really connected. And so just managing for his wife all of the doctor's office visits was, for her, just overwhelming. And so it meant, that one of the children would be just in charge of doing that. So the thing is to kind of make a list of what it is that your parent needs and then start sorting through who can do that, because you don't have to live right near them to make all those calls to the doctor's offices, and you don't have to live right there to help, that you would be the one to figure out the Medigap policy and handle all of the insurance needs. So it's really good that, everyone takes a piece of the caregiving load, rather than just think, well, the one who's closest, let them deal with the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Something else yet another thing I think people need to think about, and probably should think about this going into the situation, is that if you're not organized, you better start thinking about being organized.
Oh,
because,
right.
Because you're going to have a lot of pieces of paper.
Oh, very much.
A lot of different kinds of information, names of contact people. You're going to have to set up some kind of a system for keeping records and keeping things in an organized way, so that when there's some particular piece of information you need, or you need a name, or you need a phone number, or you need a form, or something like that, mm-hmm. you have to, however you do it, you've got to have some way set up so that then you can just go right to a file drawer or something like that, and you know where the stuff is.
Oh, absolutely. I did create a caregiver kit. I was actually on QVC for that. But the caregiver kit has a whole portfolio and all of the folders and an explanation of why you need certain pieces of information. And I have there's a whole tablet in there on how to keep track of all the medications and why it's so important to take that list to every single doctor visit, so that they can see what you're taking. And that includes over-the-counter medications, too. A lot of, I think, older people will think, oh, well, if I'm taking an aspirin or if I'm taking cold medicine or whatever, that really doesn't count. But it does, and it can interact with some of the medications that they're on. So I actually created that, and people can find out about it. It includes the book in Penguin now. This was produced by Penguin, and it's only like $10 for all of these different things that you get, and it includes the book. But if you just went to my website at lindarodes.com, you'll track it down there. But whatever system you create, you're absolutely right. It will be just an avalanche of paperwork, and it becomes very difficult and overwhelming, and especially because so many of those, I would say, in our 50s, who are probably the primary age group dealing with this, are also working. I mean, it might be the time that you're, probably at the highest point in your career and you're very busy, so trying to juggle all of that in your life, and then all of a sudden the needs of a parent or both parents and maybe an add onto that, maybe your in-laws at the same time. That alone, there's been this Family Caregiver Alliance. They're always doing different studies and coming out, and I mean, they're showing that people are getting close to spending at least 15 hours a week just on caregiving, you know, making all of these calls, stopping over, making sure everything is okay. And, you know, when you think about that, I mean, it's almost like having a part-time job in addition to everything else you do.
Mm-hmm. We're a little bit past the midpoint here. Let me introduce again our guest, Dr. Linda Rhodes. She is a former Secretary of Aging for the state of Pennsylvania, creator of the award-winning Family Caregiving Program. She is president of Linda Rhodes Caregiving. She writes a weekly column devoted to aging parent issues. She's the author of a couple of books, of the book Caregiving as Your Parents Age, and then another book which has a lot of basic questions and answers for people who are taking care of their older parents. Should mom be left alone? Should dad be driving? That's what the book is called. They're both published by the New American Library and are available in paperback, so they're not terribly expensive. You can seek them out. Also, if you have internet access, you can look at her website, lindarhodes.com, that has information about her books, about this caregiver kit, and also some other basic kinds of information about taking care of older parents. And questions here on the program are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. How do you suggest people think about when it comes to the point where if they have a parent and the parent, it's pretty clear that they can't live completely independently in their own home anymore, so that they've got to go someplace where they can have some help. And so possibility would be, say, some kind of facility, some kind of assisted living kind of thing. And I'm sure that people also think maybe the first thing they think about, well, maybe mom or dad could come to live with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be great, but that it can also be extremely difficult. And how do you suggest people even think about that, even try to make that decision about, is that really the right thing to do? And is this, you know, can we really actually make that work? Is our relationship up to this?
Exactly. Or if there certainly will be some strain with it. And I know, I mean, just from personal experience, when we had taken in my, it was my former husband's grandmother, and she was 95, and I was actually pregnant with my first child. And, I mean, that was quite a year. It's a year I wouldn't hesitate in a minute to do that decision again. It was a tough one, and we had to bring in some home health care during more of that non-medical care. I would say the last 3 or 4 months that she was with us, but there's a lot to consider. And I go back to, if you're thinking that it really isn't safe for us, like your mom, to be living alone any longer, again, I do think it's important to have that geriatric assessment, work with a physician, so that you really understand what your mom's needs are going to be. I mean, and an important piece of that then, once you know that and get the physician involved, because sometimes he or she can talk to your mother in a way that you can't, and, you know, might let her know that, look, if I know you love living at home, but you are continually falling, and that really poses some health risks for you, I see a need for you to still, you know, to get more exercise, and we can work on your medication so that you're not as dizzy and try to figure all of this out. But if you're in an assisted living facility, you don't have to, you know, find the transportation to get some of the physical therapy that you could use every day. And, I mean, to start showing her that this actually can improve the quality of your life and prevent you from deteriorating if you just stay home alone and just remain there. So I think a physician can be a real ally with that. And that way you'll start understanding exactly, you know, more what her needs are. Once you begin to know that, then you can start sorting through, you know, taking a look at assisted living, getting your mom to go to some of these places to find out. I mean, chances are she has a friend who has opted for either independent living or assisted living, and, you know, go visit that friend, you know, spend some time there. You can even do, you can do a weekend stay so that you can get a feel of the place, and to start to find out if that makes sense for her. If you're thinking of bringing her home to be with you, And, I mean, if you have a spouse, then this has got to be a decision you jointly make because, I mean, otherwise that can really, I think, place some wear and tear on your marriage. So, again, you're jointly making that decision. You start to understand what it is she needs. If you're both working and mom is home alone most of the day again, you're sort of just, you know, just kind of trading places and not changing what some of her needs actually are. So then you might want to look at an adult day living program. It's also called adult daycare, where you would be able to have your mom go there maybe every day, every other day, and she would get, you know, quite a bit of social stimulation and physical exercise. I mean, those are really excellent programs. You know, so you would have that. Maybe you bring in some non-medical senior care where a person's coming in and providing them some companionship, perhaps making meals with them and having lunch with them. I mean, there's you're seeing a real growth in that industry. One of the larger groups is like Homestead Senior Care, and you'll find more of these non-medical groups where they'll do everything, but it won't be anything that's medical. But to me, it can be extremely helpful for you know, for an individual. And then, I mean, you'd have to figure out how many, you know, taking her to the doctor's offices, providing that transportation. It's just totally understanding how your life will change. And also, you know, setting up the home physically so that's easy for her to navigate. And, you know, it might mean you changing. I know if we were to bring my mom at our home, she would end up getting the bedroom on the ground floor, and then we would have to move and go upstairs because she wouldn't be able to negotiate that. So it can be done either way. And, you know, I've seen where some families have really enjoyed having their parent come, and that's something that the parent wants. And then there are others that I know, some parents are extremely independent, and they don't want that under any set of circumstances. They really like the idea of, you know, doing something with assisted living. So there's a lot of options out there today that I don't think people, you know, quite realize. And if you have a little bit of land, there's what they also call eco cottages. And so these are these elder care kind of cottages where you can actually lease. It's like a very small mobile home, and that can be, you know, right next to you. And so your parent can be, very, you know, very close to you, make it easier, but they still have their own, you know, their own private space. So, again, it's A, understanding their physical and mental health needs and what level of functioning they have when they come home to be with you. Or then you look at assisted living. But you need to really know that and work with the physician first.
We have a couple of callers here to bring into the conversation. We'll talk first with someone here on a cell phone on our toll-free line. This is line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, hi, thank you. Well, this is a problem that's going to only get worse and worse and worse in huge numbers as the baby boomers get into this period. My problem with this program is that it's sort of being presented as, well, first of all, the case example you're giving is you're a doctor, your sister's a nurse, and you're both well-educated and probably pretty able to deal with a lot of the bureaucracy. But that's not representative of the vast majority of American people. The vast majority of American people can't deal even with these confusing credit card bills that people get. This is not what most Americans are going to be falling into. And the situation in this country is healthcare delivery is completely and totally broken. I mean, the very example you gave of people having to go to 3 or 4 different specialists, often in different parts of the hospital, often at different parts, different sides of the town, of the city or town, it's inexcusable. It's nuts. I mean, there is no way other people can deal with this, let alone the vast majority of people that aren't that educated. My wife and I, both of who are well educated, are taking care of my father. And dealing with the bureaucracy and the screw-ups at the hospitals, and we don't have this phone number, and we don't have that, it's half of the craziness of dealing with this is that. And it's inexcusable, and the reason it is we have a healthcare system that is completely and totally set up to make money, not to take care of people. Even doctors these days, you no longer feel like your own doctor is first and foremost thinking about your father or your needs. It becomes clear very early on. The biggest thing that's going on here is they are biggest concern is, how do I not get sued? Not what is best for the patient. And until this healthcare system gets turned much more in the direction of where the European system is, we're walking into a disaster. And sadly, everybody walks into it singly on their own. If it was all happening at the same time, with everybody, people would be outraged. They demand a change. But and the problem with your book is it tends to make it sound like, well, this is your problem to deal with. You need to figure this out. You need to reorient your life. You need to do all this. A good deal of this is none of our problems. It's a for-profit healthcare system that is running in this country. That's all I have to say.
Well, all right. I thank you for the comment. Well, I don't. Short of changing the national healthcare system, what do we do about this?
Well, I certainly hear his frustration and anger, and even though I'm, in quotes, educated, I find it extremely frustrating as well, dealing with the bureaucracy and then all of the different specialists. I think it's made it extremely difficult for older people, and I would love to see, you know, quite a few different changes to be made. But given that, I think there are a number of things that you have to do as a consumer, and you are stuck trying to figure out exactly, you know, what your parent needs, and to become more of a, you know, an advocate that they do get the kind of care that they want. When someone is admitted to a hospital, I mean, one thing that I always recommend is that you always have some family member there, especially in the beginning, and that you're sitting there, you know, even during the night shift and early morning shift, you know, to make sure that your parents' needs are being met, because of the, you know, you see such a huge shortage or staff shortage going on in hospitals across the country. And yes, you can certainly complain about it, but right now, if my dad's in the hospital, you know, trying to make sure that someone is at least there, making sure that, you know, the call button is being answered. You'll see oftentimes in nursing homes that those individuals who have more family involvement, who are coming to make sure everything is okay, usually do receive, you know, some of the better care. So the problem is, yes, there, I think, needs to be a strong consumer movement to change the healthcare system. But in the meantime, as consumers, I think it's on us as baby boomers to get, you know, more educated on what's needed. There are local area agencies on aging all over the country, and there is an elder care locator number that you can call to find out, is there a family caregiving support program available in your community that can assist you, you know, helping you care for your parent? And they'll let you know what all the different services are in the community. And not all of the times, a lot of people think, oh, well, that's just going to be for somebody who's low income. Not necessarily. They do offer some services where people will pay a bit more if they can afford more. And they can let you know. And that number, I know it's hard for folks, especially if they're driving, but if you're at home, it's 800-677-1116. So that can be like a first place to go to find out what is available for your parents.
Okay, well, let's talk with somebody else here. This is someone in Hoopston, line number one. Hello.
Hi, David. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, just fine.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm on a cell, so I'm just going to make a few quick comments, and I'll go ahead and hang up since time is short and your guests can comment. My background is actually in long-term care. I travel the state visiting various nursing homes, and my education's in public health. Just a couple of quick comments from firsthand knowledge, and I apologize if this was covered. I just tuned in. I would recommend anybody who has parents that are elderly, do yourself a huge favor and make sure that their affairs are in order, financial and otherwise. Again, I can tell you from firsthand knowledge, it's not so much the money that's going to kill you after they go, but it's, you know, Uncle Joe's chair and a favorite sweater, and that's going to cause more of a rift in a family if those things aren't already earmarked to go to somebody. You'd be surprised. Believe me, you'd be surprised. I had a meeting yesterday, and I never heard this term, so I'll throw it out there. We're seeing sort of a decline in the census in nursing homes currently. It's stable. There's a little bit of a decline, and the terminology was World War II echo. In other words, the men that were killed in World War II are gone, and where they should be in a nursing home, and that's the terminology that they're using as to why the census is down. But again, within a very short period of time, of course, the census is just going to go right through the roof with the baby boomers, as you guys were talking about. What I'm noticing in this state anyway is maybe across the board is the high acuity level of the people entering nursing homes. They're much sicker, and the money being spent for the last 20% of their life is just astronomical. And the other thing is, visiting the various nursing homes, I'm noticing large campuses where the people enter independent living, and they go through system assisted living, and finally to the last part of their life, the skilled area. And that seems to be very, very popular. But I do agree with the previous caller as to the finances and the need. Where's that money going to come from if we're already in a position of struggling? And it's very interesting, Shaw. I'll go ahead and read off, and you guys can comment.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. You can get Dr. Rhodes, you can comment on any or all of that that you want.
Well, yeah, he makes an excellent point. What we're finding with nursing homes, yes, the census is down, and part of it, too, is because many states are pushing, they'll use terms like we want to rebalance long-term care, and what they want to see is that more people are receiving community-based care and more home health care so that they can stay at home longer, and they'll, you know, send in the nursing care to keep them there because they feel that that's what people want, and that also it would be less expensive than placing them in skilled facilities. On the other hand, what your caller had mentioned is that what you're seeing is that hospitals are discharging people sooner. They're looking, and part of that's all due to reimbursement rates. And again, feeding into what your other caller had said about, you know, just kind of follow the money and you'll know why we have different policies. So what they're doing now is that they're using nursing homes more for rehab. So if someone, say, for instance, is recovering from a hip fracture, they're going to get them out of the hospital sooner and looking for either a rehab facility or your nursing homes. The nursing homes are taking people who are much sicker than they had in the past. And as a result, you're going to see what, when he used the term acuity rates, and these are people who have more chronic conditions. They might be getting ventilator care, dialysis, all kinds of levels of care that we didn't see in nursing homes about like maybe 10 or 15 years ago. So, again, the expense, maybe you'll see the census down, not as many people, but the expense is still going to be up there because of the kind of care that they're going to be receiving. And then many of these homes now are situated as part of a whole campus. The people are finding that it is a lot easier if you have, you can start off, you can have independent living, assisted living, and then skilled facilities. And it doesn't mean that you'll just go, you know, okay, so I have so many years in one, you know, independent, and then I go assisted, and then I go skilled. You can actually be going in and out of these at any time. I might be independent, break my hip, I'm off in assisted living till I get better. I mean, maybe there's a short period I'm over in skilled care, then I go to assisted living, and then I go back home again. So you're going to see where they're going to try to at least wrap this together and have it more on one campus. But the crisis in terms of financing, and a lot of folks are saying, look, we've got to get much more realistic and create a more affordable long-term care insurance product, because to sit here and think that we're going to be funding this as an entitlement program when people, you know, have gone through all of their assets and you go under the state, the Medicaid programs to pay for nursing home care, there's just no way to afford it, not with the numbers that we're going to see, even though chances are we are going to be living longer. And if we do more about our own health care, and I think be more personally responsible about nutrition and exercise, then we are going to live longer and hopefully not need as much of the skilled care. But there'll be a point where we're still going to need it.
I'll try and sneak one more call here, line two, cell phone. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. I'll try to be really quick. I am on a cell phone. I was thinking about the last caller but one, and I think he is correct that it is, for many families, actually undoable. And I really appreciate the degree to which your guest has been trying to put things in a positive light, that there are some very real things you can do. But some of the informational needs and the organizational needs are simply not within the grasp of a great many of the people who are going to deal with these issues. I know when my aunt spent her 6 years post-stroke, if it had not been for the fact that my sister could basically spend 40 or 50% of her time just delivering my aunt to various appointments, keeping long lists of medications, keeping physicians straight, decoding bills. It would have simply been undoable. And I think that we do need a medical system that is totally revamped. And I realize that many people in our nation don't like the sound of that. But in fact, we are not providing high quality care given the amount of time, energy, and money. One would almost like to coerce legislators into having their grandma in one of these end-of-life situations and maybe give them a better sense of how it works. But thank you, Dr. Rhodes. I'm going to be looking on your website. Thanks so much.
All
thank
right.
you.
Thanks for the call. Well, a final thought that you could offer folks?
Well, I think in terms of the tenor of the different things that have been said by your callers, is I certainly hope I didn't make this sound like this is all very easy to do, because it's not. I think it does take a lot of forethought and work. And I do believe that individuals who, don't have a lot of education can still be organized if they know the different numbers to call. I'll tell you, I was very humbled one time when I was Secretary of Aging and took a drive up into a very, very rural area. And came upon, it was an older gentleman who was taking care of his wife. And the amount of care that he was providing her was just amazing. And he only had, I would say, maybe an eighth grade education. And yet he had such a marvelous system that he had figured out himself on keeping track of her medications. And he actually went and bought, a rather easy to understand book. I think it was like The People's Medicine or something like that, so that he could, keep track of her care, raise different questions with her physicians. And, this was with someone with an eighth grade education in a rural area who certainly didn't have access to a lot of the things, and we didn't even have, the internet at that time. And there are things that I think people can do and that we've got to constantly reach out to them. And if it is through something like an area agency on aging, and no, it's not the solution to everything, but at least I think they can let you know some of the things that you are able to do.
All right. And also, you might take a look at the book we've been talking about here. It's titled Caregiving as Your Parents Age by New American Libraries, the publisher, by our guest, Dr. Linda Rhodes. She is indeed the former Secretary of Aging for the state of Pennsylvania. Also, you can look at her website, which is lindarhodes.com. And Dr. Rhodes, thanks very much.
No, thank you.
The broadcast today made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers box lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Strawberry Fields, 328-1655. That's it for us on Focus. Up next, the afternoon magazine, the host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, Dave.